There were 47 candidates running for a Seattle City Council. 18 will remain for the general election in November. C.R. Douglas, political analyst for Q13 Fox, is with us to parse the election. Thanks for coming by.
Good afternoon.
So all the incumbent City Council members fared well, except Jean Godden. What's happening there?
Well, I think there's a question about her effectiveness. That came up over and over again on the campaign trail. She's trailing right now. It doesn't look good for her. Generally, the later votes that are counted skew younger, skew more progressive. So I think she'll probably lose ground as the week goes on, as opposed to gaining it. She lost a couple important allies this election. I mean, her former employer, the Seattle Times, did not endorse her.
Ouch.
A lot of the business community money went to her opponent. So if it's over for Jean, it's still a remarkable career. She had 50 years plus of civic engagement and activism. And if she's walking off the stage now, she ought to still be very proud.
Holding her head high. Well, the rest of the city council incumbents look like they're going to move on to the November elections, including Shama Sawant with about 50% of the vote. What do you make of that race?
Well, I think it's a strong showing for Sawant. Listen, she got to that 50% threshold as a polarizing figure who's very hated in an August primary when her folks really don't show up. I mean, young folks, renters, they're not engaged typically in summer elections. I mean, they turn out in November. So that she gets basically to 50, I think, is a good sign. I think her numbers grow as you get to November. She surged 2 years ago in her last election from the primary to the general election, because the folks that turn out in November are more progressive, are more her people.
C.R., how did the hot political issues of the day play out in these primary elections? Did they?
I think there was only one hot political issue. I mean, ever since the mayor's task force on housing affordability dropped its report a few weeks ago, that has been 90% plus of the conversation in all these races. I mean, it didn't matter which one you were in, which part of town. And I think, interestingly, in many of these positions, there was a strong showing by kind of the Sawant ally. Certainly Lisa Herbold over in West Seattle, Michael Maddox up in Northeast, Burgess's opponent, the former tenants' right activist. So a lot of these races are shaping up as kind of what to do about housing affordability, and are you kind of a moderate on that, or are you the more radical Sawant, where you want to stick it to developers, push rent control, all the rest? That's the dynamic going forward.
Now, seven of these council races were in districts, and supposedly that was going to make it easier to get into them. Maybe it would make money less important. What did we see when it came to campaign expenditures and their impact on the outcome?
I think just the opposite happened, meaning I think money became more important, which was exactly what districts was trying to avoid. You saw a record amount of independent expenditures, and many people, when they looked at these districts, the smaller geographies, felt like it was actually easier to buy an outcome than in an at-large race. I mean, Jean Godden, who's like behind 200 points, right, 200 votes, you know, you can move the needle in some of these smaller districts with a $10,000 or $20,000 mailing that you probably wouldn't even bother in the at-large races. Money became more of a factor this year.
Although I got to say, a candidate actually knocked on my door in this election, which has never happened before.
Well, ironically, it sliced both ways.
Yeah.
There was a return of doorbelling this year, which you've never seen in past because you don't doorbell in an at-large race. You could doorbell in these district races, and yet you have more money. Two things happened at the same time that were, in a way, competing against each other.
Well, arguably just as important as the city of Seattle City Council is the Port of Seattle, which has huge sway over a huge swath of the city. There were elections for the commissioners. What happened in those races?
Well, what happened was Shell didn't do well. I mean, that big oil wasn't on the ballot, but it might as well have been. Listen, these races, the two positions, were largely about that lease to Shell and the Arctic drilling fleet. And the candidates who supported that were kind of from the maritime industry lost. So it was a big kind of rebuke to that. It was a big rebuke to the port. And I think going forward, it's going to be tougher for Shell than it has been.
Looking forward, what are you going to be watching as we head towards the general election?
I think this issue of housing and its affordability is going to be the huge issue. It has come up over and over again. And going forward, you're going to have this debate about do you want to be tougher on developers, require more of the private sector to carry the burden of affordable housing and push rent control, or are you sort of a more moderate? Another thing to watch, and it relates a bit to this, is the Sawant race. You know, interestingly, for all the money that was sloshing around, none of it really went to Sawant. All these independent expenditures went to other races. The business community sat this one out, sat the Sawant primary race out. They felt like their money was better spent in these other positions. Now, if they still sit out November, Sawant will have a free ride. They may feel like she's not beatable. We will let her in, but we're going to try and influence the other races. And that's a trend to watch for.
Well, it's going to be a lot easier to focus now that you don't have 47 candidates out there. I think there were 9 in one race. Now at least there are just 2 in each race. And by the way, we're going to be having debates with all the candidates coming up on the record in the future. Thank you so much, C.R. Douglas, for stopping by.
My pleasure.
Political analyst for Q13 News. And he also joins us on The Week in Review on Friday at 10 a.m.